Welcome to Dr. Emmett Miller's Healing Times Radio, Conversations with Extraordinary People. This show can be heard on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network every Friday at 1 p.m. and 1 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Go to dreamvision7radio.com, click Listen Live, and enjoy the show.
Hello, this is Dr. Emmett Miller. Welcome back to Conversations with Extraordinary People. My goal is to provide intelligent, thinking people with information and tools to heal themselves and our world while there's still time. In each episode, we bring you intelligent conversations with the movers and shapers who have a holistic view of the world and are creating ways for us to turn the tide of divisiveness and violence that has infected our world. We're aware of the pollution of our air and water and ocean, and even noise pollution. But today's guest suggests that there is an even more important one, information pollution. The latest symptom is the COVID-19 epidemic, which has become a pandemic that could have easily been stopped in its tracks. Instead, information has been weaponized to intentionally manipulate people's unconscious mind to make them believe false information to benefit themselves and not us. And this is something that's going on all the time, more and more in our world. Last month, Twitter deleted 1 million fake people who were sending out tweets all the time. And there are millions more out there attempting to divide and conquer us. In this fascinating conversation, Dr. Rick Roth, noted psychologist and brilliant artificial intelligence guru, will show us exactly how we are being duped and reveal a new internet extension, which is soon going to be available, to help us filter out the bots, the shills, and the trolls that rule in the internet now, to create honest, authenticated information and data from real, known human beings. In our conversation, I pointed out to Rick that we didn't have enough test kits, and testing is essential to controlling an epidemic or a pandemic.
Well, not only are we not testing them, we're not isolating them, they're moving around freely in society, and this is a ticking time bomb that has literally, as the Buddhists would say, already gone off. By the time we begin testing the millions of Americans who need to be tested, it could be weeks or months. And by that time, the epidemic will be widespread. And the same thing would be expected in a third world country, because there are many countries that don't have the resources to buy test kits or do testing. So I'm pretty confident, just based on the mathematics of transmission and communication, that we are facing a global pandemic where certain at-risk groups, mostly aged or compromised people, are going to face a high risk of mortality. So what does this mean? It means that disinformation, the intentional misinforming of the public in order to serve the interests of whoever is in charge, will predictably, reliably, unconscionably lead to a much worse situation. Thousands will die. Millions will be adversely affected. The economy very likely will suffer its worst shock in decades. And why? Well, because we're not responding the way we should.
And this is because we don't have trustworthy information. We live in a polluted information environment.
Well, toxic. Yes. And I think that this COVID-19 situation brings to the fore what has been a very serious problem that people around the world have been talking about, which is the decline of trustworthy information sources, the rise of disinformation, and both social media and public media fueled confusion. So in a time when science is terrific, we know more, we can do things very quickly, where the U.S., for example, is a very rich country, we ought to be able to employ fantastically effective techniques for disseminating correct information, for pooling resources of the scientific community, organizing the various levels of the health organization. All of those things are possible. In fact, they're all required. And if we did them all and did them all perfectly, we'd probably still lose thousands of people in this epidemic. Mm-hmm. But thousands is much better than tens of thousands or possibly even millions. Mm-hmm. So you talked about information pollution. And as you know, this has been something that I've been working on for some time. My expertise spans a number of fields, but it involves human psychology as a cognitive psychologist, artificial intelligence, information sciences, and military information operations. I'm very, very keenly interested in how the information we consume affects our choices and our success or failure in life. And nearly a decade ago, I began to be extremely concerned that the rise of these technologies, the internet, artificial intelligence, and the like, were enabling a militarization of information, a kind of weaponizing of memes, which could help the employers of those techniques manipulate vast numbers of people with precision. And the situation has only become worse. It's well documented, for example, in the book by Wiley, Christopher Wiley, called Mindfuck, which is about how Cambridge Analytica was able to weaponize information about individuals down to the level of their phone numbers, who they socialize with, what churches they go to, what political parties.
You know, you mentioned Wiley's book. And let me just say that this is really an excellent book to read. It, your eyebrows will knock your hat off as you read the specificity at which they flipped elections in Trinidad and then in an African country. And then after Mr. Bannon joined, how they created Brexit and then how they interfered in the election. But how they did it, it's fascinating. And he describes it. It's quite shocking and beautiful. And of course, he was at the center of creating Cambridge Analytica. And as a young fellow, he was impressed by the power of this new tool, like a young guy with a new hatchet. He's going to hatch everything. But he realized how devious this was and how evil is when he blew the whistle on him. But the other thing is that he's a good writer. And when he describes the personalities of the people involved and how they're dressed and how they interact, it's fascinating, even in terms of how it's well written in a literary sense. So it's not a heavy scientific book, but something where any lay person can get it. So I highly recommend that. They write it as Mind F asterisk CK, so that they don't have to say the dirty word fuck. But we were talking about how disinformation has been weaponized and how it's being used to delude and manipulate people. So
yes, and I think this is a natural evolution in the history of propaganda. Mm. Now, propaganda has a rather negative connotation, as it should these days. But when propaganda began, it was actually for public health purposes. So propaganda begins with pro, which means for something. And the idea of, for example, educating people today that they should wash their hands at least 20 minutes if they want to eliminate bacteria and viruses on their hands, that would be a propaganda campaign in the positive sense. And we're all familiar with marketing campaigns, which are propaganda campaigns to make you want to buy something. And I think that everyone who's alive now and watched the rise of the internet and social media and video streaming is aware that there's very high production quality material available on almost any subject. So you can tune in to a video of your choice. And in fact, most people tune in to information sources of their choice. And these tend to, for example, if you're a conservative political person, your preference might be Fox News. If you're a progressive liberal, your preference for news might be MSNBC. The point that many people have made is that with the huge availability of digital content, people now self-select into information bubbles to a large extent. So they look for information that reinforces their beliefs. Well, on the weaponized propaganda side, this has not gone unnoticed. And with the detailed information you can get about every single person who has a cell phone or has an internet account, you pretty much reliably can predict their political and social values. Therefore, if you're trying to manipulate a public to do something and you have access to this knowledge about them, you can target to them very specific, very credible messages, which they find credible, which they read, they believe, they echo, they retweet, they forward. And this is the foundation of disinformation campaigns today. So many people have heard the terms trolls, or internet bots. These are foot soldiers in the campaign programs of those who are weaponizing information. So, for example, this is March 2020. There's a Democratic contest for president. Biden and Sanders are leaders. And if you, let's suppose you were a Russian and you wanted to strengthen the probability that the Republican would win the next election, then what you might do is you might try and make Democratic voters be either disaffected, angry, feel treated, or mistrustful of their candidates. So actively, currently, the Russians will target, say, Sanders voters with messages both for and against Biden in order to rile them up and make them disaffected, in the hopes that if Biden should prevail, many of the Sanders fans and voters would sit out the election because they would have believed the message that somehow Biden and his Democratic allies cheated and stole the election from Sanders. So this was done in 2016. It's well documented in the Mueller report from that period of time. There have been several studies that have come out of the collective intelligence agencies of the United States government explaining how this is done. And Wiley's book just adds copious detail about how to do this. I, for example, did not realize that companies can work around all of the regulations on buying private data. So they can get data on every cell phone user around the world, purchasing it legally, perhaps through a set of shell companies, to get around every law that restricts that information being sold. All right, you put this all together with the ability of companies to create, for example, internet bots by the thousands. So what they do is, because of anonymous email accounts, they're able to register bots as if they're real people on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And you can go online today and purchase disinformation services from companies, many of them based in the Philippines, who will both develop and deliver bots to deliver your messages and do your bidding, and will also employ humans doing similar work, and these are called trolls. So trolls are basically paid people who pretend to have some attitude in order to convey that attitude to somebody who will find that message an acceptable, credible message. That message will get in the recipient's head, and hopefully they'll forward it to their friends. And as a result, the bots and trolls are the foot soldiers of these disinformation campaigns.
And then you see lots of comments, so it looks like there's dozens of people who support this particular belief. So
exactly.
It's not like, feel like, oh, there's just somebody out there. But look, and then they have fake organizations. Oh, look, they're the Union of
yes.
Concerned Patriots.
And humans as animals have evolved to be very socially conscious and socially needy. And we often judge messages that are received in terms of the social status and the social standing of the speaker. And what's very important to us as animals or members of a primate tribe is that we respect the messages from those who are in our tribe, especially those who have stature in our tribe. And all of this is unconscious. So the things that you were identifying, like the number of people, the number of organizations, the names of the organizations that are associated with the messages, are cues to our unconscious that we should also accept the message. So disinformation is not a little thing. Disinformation literally is a war on our minds. And it's a war that works our unconscious to the ends and purposes of those who would manipulate us. One of the things I've learned recently, which is most shocking to me, is the impossibility of reversing the pollution effects on our minds. And by that, I mean, to a large extent, once a belief enters our minds, it will do its work, reinforcing other occurrences of that belief and causing our mind to somehow doubt and reject alternatives. So there are studies that have been done, for example, where people are presented information that they're told in advance is false. The following information is false. You read this often, say, in the news that reports the number of false statements made by the current president. And you might think that that would somehow reduce the harmful effects of those false statements, because hearing this, we would remember this story is false. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that is not the way our minds work. The story itself, the false story, goes into our memory as a story. And human memory is basically oriented around stories. And when we hear new things, the related stories help us assess whether or not what we're hearing is familiar, plausible, and sympathetic with the other stories that we've heard. So as long as all of those indicators are positive, the new information enters as credible. Whoa, what happened to the label that went in that this was false? Well, that kind of cognitive label requires active conscious cognitive processing, which is never done immediately and is never done unconsciously. So the harm of the story is in there waiting like a virus to reinforce the next false occurrence that it's consistent with. The cognitively accessible label, this story was false, rarely, if ever, is recalled, and never in time to prevent the unconscious effects.
In a way, it's related to that, the old trick of saying, don't think about an alligator.
Yes.
Because the alligator's a story, there's a picture, and the word don't simply does not have the same power, and you can't get that alligator out of your head.
Yes.
That story is there in this way. Stories that are not true, even if you say they're false, would tend to believe them if they're a story.
Yes.
And if it's coming from a website or supposedly from someone of high position, then the tendency for it to be believed unconsciously.
Yes.
Automatically.
The power of disinformation, and now we're talking about its power in our brain, on our thoughts, is profound and hardwired. 30 years ago or so, psychologist Elizabeth Loftus showed stunning results that have affected courtrooms throughout our country ever since. What she showed was that if you included a story, a little fragment of a story, as a presupposition in a question in a courtroom, the presupposition entered the brain and played the effect of true memory. So, for example, if an attorney had a presupposition that he wanted the witness to believe, he might say, for example, when you saw the defendant carrying his phone in his right hand and driving primarily with his left hand, what color tie was he wearing? So the person is just being asked about what color tie he was wearing, but the presupposed statements enter as believed facts, even though they were hypothetical, speculative, and often wrong. So we've known for some time that false statements permanently alter memory and distort the value of belief, eyewitness testimony, and the like. Now, with the widespread availability of cheap, powerful computing, which means you can have thousands or hundreds of thousands of bots, you can generate artificial photographs and videos. You can, if you want, if you're evil enough, you can poison every mind by showing it stories that go down as if they were credible, even if they're marked not true, and have the impact that you want. So this has been weaponized. Countries around the world, mostly authoritarian governments, especially Russia, have been in the forefront here. Our intelligence agencies, the intelligence agencies of other countries, are unanimous in their identification of this. The Russians have written openly about the importance of information operations and manipulating countries around the world. They're actively engaged in trying to weaken democracies throughout the European community and the United States because it strengthens their relative position. So disinformation is afoot. So today, disinformation is a much bigger enterprise than it was 10 years ago when I first felt morally obligated to do something about this. At that time, as you know, I wrote a book called Truthiness Fever, which was about the illness, widespread mental illness caused by conscious disinformation and manipulation. At that time, I was primarily focused on what was then the new decision by the Supreme Court, Citizens United, that money is speech, and with the First Amendment rights guaranteed for free speech, that literally anybody who had money could spend as much money as they wanted propagandizing almost anything. And there would be no consequences, no regulation, no restriction. So 10 years ago, it was pretty obvious to me that people were learning to exploit the technology and the new media to do the kind of manipulation we're talking about. It wasn't until 2016 and the kind of work that Cambridge Analytica had perfected that you could say this went from a coarse, broad brush strategy to micro-targeting of individuals with just unlimited effectiveness. So I started a company about 8 years ago called TruthSeal, which was an attempt to do something about this. What can you do? Well, if people are harmed by misinformation and lying, you'd like to somehow limit the amount of lying and lies that enter their heads. So the best idea that we had at that time was to use money incentives to reward truth-telling and create penalties for lying. So we started a couple of companies that were predicated on the premise that there are people who would like to have their messages really believed, and that the easiest way to do that would be allow them to guarantee them with cash bounties. So, for example, if you were Apple and you wanted people to believe your cell phones were safe, even when held to the head, you might be willing to put up a cash bounty that said, using our cell phones, as normally intended, will not harm you. And if you're harmed or you can show that we're wrong, we'll pay you this $10,000 bounty. To my shock and horror, I could find not one company that wanted to guarantee the truth of even one claim. Shocking.
Wow.
And then we tried crowdsourcing of these campaigns, and we found that not enough people cared enough to put up their own money to guarantee the truth of statements. So fast forward 7 or 8 years later, the problem was becoming more apparently dangerous. It was rising. The volume of disinformation was rising exponentially. We'd already seen national elections in the United States manipulated and turned on disinformation campaigns. And I believed that there was another idea that could work. And this time I decided to, I was really motivated by thinking about if the problems come from the multitude of bots and trolls, is there some way to eliminate bots and trolls from the internet? Now, you would think that the main platforms that are responsible for disseminating disinformation, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and the like, you would think that these platforms would recognize that bots and trolls are the problem, or at least a major part of the problem, and they would eliminate them. But those corporations have huge vested interests in the way they make money. And they make money by selling advertising, and they sell advertising to people based on the volume of readers they can get, the amount of time they spend on it, whether they act on it, and the like. So they have no desire, no interest in eliminating any content for the most part, because content generates engagement, generates activity on their websites, feeds directly into their advertising. In the current 2020 presidential election, for example, Facebook has explicitly said it would not even bar false advertising from its platform. So
even if they knew it was false.
Even if they know it's false.
They allow it to be.
They allow it. They're, as of today, they actually banned one ad, which is the first time they've done that. But for the most part, they're complicit in this activity. Twitter, for example, has been trying to eliminate bots and trolls. In 1 month back in 2019, where they studied this, they eliminated more than a million fake accounts. A million fake users in 1 month.
Wow.
So let's go back to this problem. Why are there bots and trolls on the internet? And the answer is because it helps these platforms make money. Why don't they eliminate them? Because they have a conflict of interest. Mm-hmm. What would it take to eliminate bots and trolls? And this gave rise to the company that I came out of retirement to establish, which is called Trusted Origins. We hope to launch in the next month or so. So bots and trolls, we believe, can be eliminated by authenticating that every user on your system or your platform is a real-life human being, and then barring troll-like behavior. So bots cannot be authenticated as real-life human beings, so our approach has no bots. Trolls are people who wantonly spew messages that their paymasters reward them for. The messages that we're concerned about are those that are obviously false. So our new approach is to create a community of like-minded human beings. They're authenticated as humans who make a commitment as part of their membership in our community to be both honest and civil and to not hide conflicts of interest if they have them. So the basic strategy here is to try and create a new set of platforms on what you might imagine could be called the trusted internet, where membership in the trusted internet requires that you be authenticated.
You be an actual human being.
You be an actual human being, and you risk your own membership and lifetime participation in this community on being honest and civil.
And honest and civil, honest means what?
Honest means that you don't knowingly pass along already disproved information, that you don't spout unfounded claims as true, that you distinguish opinion from grounded assertions. So the basic issue here is, how do you get closer to truth? How do you eliminate widespread falsehoods? And having worked on this now for nearly a decade, I have come to an answer myself that I believe in, which a number of my colleagues find quite plausible. You know, the question of truth is a science and philosophical issue which has been well studied. And summarizing, you know, nearly 100 years of work on this, we can know something's false when we have evidence that disproves it. We can never know something is true because we can never have every possible case in front of us. And if we assert, for example, that something is true forever, any counterexample down the line will disprove it. So what scientists generally believe is we move closer to truth by becoming more specific in our hypotheses as we narrow them and make them more precise to avoid saying things which are already disproved. That's a long way of saying we can never have truth, but we can get closer to truth if we embrace the idea that something that has been disproved is false and is no longer credible. So, how do we get closer to truth in this sense? Well, my current belief is the best possible approach is to establish communities of trust, which comprise trustworthy, mutually trusted individuals. And these individuals basically commit to the kind of behavior that I talked about. They don't spread lies, they don't participate wantonly in falsehoods, and they separate grounded, evidence-based beliefs from unsupportable opinions.
And hearsay.
Hearsay. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of things that you should not pass along as true, as long as you label them as not true, maybe not even false, but unknown, untrusted at this point. So we imagine that there are two kinds of roles for people in our communities. One is kind of the passive consumer. The passive consumer would like never to have known lies enter their eyes for the reasons I said before. Any story gets in there and it affects our brains. So we are creating blacklists of articles and sources. Sources might be websites that are well known to promote falsehoods, or individual authors, speakers, who are not to be trusted because they've demonstrated they will lie repeatedly. So our consumers are people that we believe would like to opt in to an automatic filtering out of false information from their feeds. And we're planning on offering a browser plugin that they can put in their Chrome browser right away that will allow them to either not see at all articles that come up on the web that are blacklisted, or have these articles at their headline level, at the URL level, marked as distrusted. Distrusted because they've been blacklisted by members of a community of trust who did the homework to show that that article should not be trusted because it comes from a repeated liar, or it incorporates and promotes known falsehoods. So the consumers get the benefit of these blacklists by automatic filtering if they want. The other group of people that we're interested in are what I might call the active resistors of disinformation. And the active resistors are people who are offended and worried about all this lying and pollution, and they are spending their time fighting it and being willing to say, this is bullshit, and here's why. Now, you might think this is like a children's crusade to save the world. And to the people who work on my new company for free without pay, I tell them the same thing. We're going to save the world because the world will not survive when it's in just a sea of disinformation. The information pollution will have its predictable harmful effects, and we will die from the toxins. Maybe not directly, but we won't fight coronavirus. We won't fight global warming. All of the actions that are required to maintain our planet and the health of people on our planet require us to basically be able to motivate, militate, organize people around true facts. So I am creating a community of trust to fight disinformation. And the website will be called the Disinformation Resistance, and it'll be one that is spawned by the mothership, this new company, Trusted Origins. But I wanted to point out to you that this is not just a children's crusade. Disinformation resistance is already well underway throughout much of the world, not so much in the United States, which is acting somewhat like an autocratic third world in this regard. But in the European Union, for example, there has been a strategic program of the European Union called EU versus disinfo.org, I think, where they are consciously monitoring the messages that are generated by, supported by, and in the service of the Kremlin. How big is this problem? Well, in the approximately 5 years that I've been following it, they have identified 7,000 specific disinformation articles. These are TV broadcasts, Facebook posts, articles published, you name it, the Russians are up to it. And the EU considers it a strategic, vital issue to fight this, because the Russian intention is to weaken the European Union, to get countries like the UK to withdraw from the European Union. Score one for the Russian disinformation campaign that has just happened. And so they publish 7,000 rebuttals, which are available on their website. They put out a daily and a weekly newsletter calling attention to these things. Now, this program is not the only one. Latvia, Lithuania, Sweden, they have already organized at the citizen level and somewhat at the government level similar resistance to disinformation.
And here in the United States?
Zero. Whoa. There's zero organized opposition to disinformation in the United States. In fact, given the current political situation, you would expect the U.S. intelligence agencies, intelligence community, one that I was involved in for a number of years, you would expect them to continue to blow the whistle on this stuff. Unfortunately, the head of the National Intelligence Collection, the National Intelligence Collective Agencies, has a director of national intelligence in the United States. And we have just received a nomination for someone to be the acting head who was roundly rejected as unqualified just a few months ago by Republicans and Democrats alike. But the person who nominates him, who holds the current top position in the White House, obviously is more interested in having a friend who can shape what comes out of the intelligence communities than he is interested in the United States public receiving valid information.
Fighting disinformation.
He has no interest in fighting disinformation. As far as I can tell, he's been the beneficiary of it in 2016. We know from the intelligence communities that the Russians are actively supporting him and his campaign again in 2020. And he just refers to it as the Russian hoax thing. Mm-hmm. So,
I think, you know, one of the most interesting stories around the disinformation debacle that's going on out there is that bit of disinformation that was put out before the previous election that Hillary Clinton was running a child sex ring out of the basement of a pizzeria in Washington, which a huge number of people believe. There were groups of people up in arms about this, and there's even one fellow showed up at the pizzeria with a shotgun demanding to see the basement where all of these children were being held. And the place, by the way, didn't have a basement, and yet how many people were attracted by that and believe that, and we're just saying that this is happening thousands of times in all of our lives in small and large ways.
Yeah. Well, you can boil this down to a clear, simple, present danger. people believe the stories they consume. If the stories are scary enough, they call to arms in the minds of the people who hear them. So nothing is new here. Mm-hmm. We hear clarion calls to do something, and some fraction of people will respond by doing something. Mm-hmm. Now, we began talking about the COVID-19, the novel coronavirus, how it's a clear and present danger, and it's not in the interest of vested powers to be embarrassed or to be made to look foolish or incompetent. So what is the response of someone in power who's incapable, unprepared to deal with this? Denial, distraction, name-calling. I wish I were telling you a fairy tale. Mm. But I'm just describing the news today. Mm-hmm. So the shocking part of this is nothing here should be surprising. We know the facts. The facts are there are vested interests. They have weaponized the capability to manipulate beliefs, and money is plentifully available to them. There are no laws restricting them. There's nothing protecting us.
And it's very dangerous. You're jumping out of the airplane and you think you have on a parachute and you actually have on a backpack. Really important to know what the truth is. And this is very much life or death for all of us.
Yes. So I was listening to the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, earlier in March, describing why the state of California was going to adopt a state of emergency in response to the coronavirus. His presentation was measured, factful, not fear-mongering, but truthful and informative. And he reinforced the importance of giving not only the agencies that are empowered to help us, but the public the information we need to take actions that are appropriate at this time. So I was struck by that and the contrast with the way the federal government has behaved thus far. For example, not offering but a handful of test kits to the states, not allowing anybody other than a few laboratories to do the tests. All of the things that they've done are inappropriate ways to deal with a spreading epidemic. So the activists that I'm trying to engage in the disinformation resistance community would be worldwide authenticated volunteers who feel it's urgent to begin to clean up the information environment. The internet information environment is a cesspool today. The rise of misinformation as a result primarily of disinformation campaigns is exponential. The fraction of truth is vanishing. What is the solution? The solution, I believe, is to have a means of blacklisting false sources.
So in effect, as you said, it's creating, it's like right now we know that there's the internet and the web, and there's also something called the dark web, and that's something that crooks and thieves and so forth use, and one can go to the dark web and buy heroin, hire someone to kill someone for you. But then you're talking about sort of like a third internet, which is the internet of trust.
Yes.
Another layer.
So I think that the internet as it is now is a wild west, unregulated, and increasingly will become a cesspool because there's an incentive to pollute it.
Yes.
With messages, whatever they are, whatever purpose the payer, paymasters have in mind.
And there's such a struggle for people's eyeballs. We know this sense of how this information's continually coming at us. And the only way that they can, the only way that those people can make money out of it is if they capture our attention long enough to sell us a product or get us to vote for their candidate or more click on a different place yes. here to keep you in. And the best way to get our attention is to put something out there that scares us.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, so-called clickbait.
Exactly. And so we're constantly being encouraged to be afraid.
Yes.
And therefore, we have this increasing level of anxiety. But then the more anxious that people are, and of course, when you're anxious, that means your limbic system is reacting in a stress format. When that happens, the mechanics of, you know, of neuroscience tell us that cognition is shut off. So you make poorer decisions. You miss important facts, and you feel compelled to react, shoot from the hip, or maybe have a drink, or maybe take a handful of pills or something to escape from it. So the system, the cesspool, makes us more and more tense, more and more frightened, in the hopes that from this fear that we have will cause us to click on this particular item and buy a thousand N95 face masks in order to make money for the company, not because we need those for ourselves, and on.
Yes, I take your point. I agree with everything you said. I would add to that that a number of commentators have talked about an additional reaction, which somebody clever called existential dread, trying to describe the feeling that thinking people have about how they're going to get out of this situation where they're constantly bombarded with scary, most likely false information. So another reaction is simply to withdraw from social engagement. So whether you become let's say, conditioned to be fearful and reactive, as you said, or you become conditioned to turn off all sources of information because so many of them are painful. In both cases, you are dumbing down the citizenry. And if you have a dumbed down citizenry, well, what kinds of decisions will they make? What people will they elect? What will their governments do? And I think that it's not difficult to conjecture that if you totally poison the minds of a citizenry, you've literally destroyed whatever society or civilization they were constructing. So I think we're on the cusp of the end of progress, the end of civilization, and the end of civility, if we do not deal with this glut of toxic information pollution. So, will we be able to stop it? I'm actually hopeful because I think that with our Trusted Origins idea, we can create communities of people who commit to honest and civil behavior. We can actually find a lot of people who are willing to become activists in actively resisting. And the work that we're asking them to do is to help us assess the trustworthiness of information sources so that those that are fallacious, lies, ungrounded, can be marked as distrusted. And so also we can banish from the community's eyeballs the generators of that information, be they publishers or authors.
Now, for people who hear this and are really interested in staying in touch with what happens with Trusted Origins. And I mean, who doesn't want to, you know, at least you click on a button and, I mean, then you see only trusted information and it gets filtered. Of course, you can click the button in the other direction and dive back into the cesspool.
Yes.
So it doesn't stop, but it gives you an option. So a lot of people want to know about this. How can they follow up on it?
Well, the website is a placeholder right now, but it'll become the real website shortly. So I would say go to trustedorigins.com and contact us if you want us to contact you back at some point, or just check in every few weeks. The disinformation resistance will be a specific community of trust whose rules will be very explicit. Everybody who's authenticated as a human is permanently assigned an identity. They can choose a pen name or their real name if they want. And from that point forward, if they endorse or author an article as being trustworthy, then they're risking their reputation. How that reputation might be hurt is if someone else reads that article and actually knows that it's false.
So people can...
They challenge.
Yeah. So go to trustedorigins.com, keep that around to look at it. And if you are receiving my newsletter, I'm certainly going to keep you abreast of this. And full disclosure, I'm also part of the Trusted Origins organization. And in the newspaper, I'll be bringing updates as to what's happening in this regard. So really want to thank you for being here, Rick. It's a fascinating situation, we have to do it again sometime soon when we've moved a little further along the pathway to making this available to people. Thanks.
Well, I'm glad to be here. I'd say if I were going to give your users one tip, which is a public health recommendation, do whatever you can to block falsehoods from entering your eyes or ears. You are not immune to the toxic effects of lies. So try not. Get over your fear of missing out. Choose to miss out wherever you can from sources that you know are distrusted.
Even if they're saying things that you wish were true, even if they're saying things that you like, if they're liars, do not give them entry into your mind.
Exactly. It's, you know, we began by talking about a worldwide pandemic around a virus, COVID-19. Well, the Richard Dawkins, who wrote The Selfish Gene and who coined the term meme, was the first to point out that our brains are acted upon by ideas, which he called memes, in the same way our biology is acted on by viruses. There is every parallel between the two. COVID-19 is a threat, a mortal threat to civilization if we don't protect people. And the same thing is true of disinformation, a mortal threat.
So protect yourself, and as soon as we can, we'll give you more information of how we might assist you in that process. Again, thanks a lot for being here, Rick.
Bye now.
So protect yourself, and as soon as we can, we'll give you more information of how we might assist you in that process.
You've been listening to Dr. Emmett Miller's Healing Times Radio, Conversations with Extraordinary People, on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. For more information about Dr. Miller's work, his upcoming events, new programs, and how you can change your mind and change your life, visit his multimedia website at drmiller.com. That's drmiller.com. And if you're interested in his Outsmarting COVID and Coronavirus free resources, visit drmiller.com/COVID.